once more unto the breach, dear friends.
Else fill up the wall with our English dead.
Ah, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And if there are, if they do happen to be any boys and girls out there, you too. But you're strange and by definition, I guess, overly intelligent if you're listening to this. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and this is Jake McClure. And today we have a special guest that's not really a guest. He's coming back. And so, Jeff, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be back. It is really good to be back.
Good. We are the Personal Wealth Coach, and not coincidentally, that is the name of an SEC-registered investment advisory firm out of Salado, Texas, which, again, not coincidentally, has on its principal operating folks the same two people that are the principal operating folks on this radio program. So let's go ahead and start with what's happened over the week. That's an SEC-registered firm, so if we say something silly, that probably doesn't reach the level of an SEC complaint, or you'd be complaining the entire program. But if we say something fraudulent or something that you believe is way beyond the pale, that's who to talk to.
How far beyond the pale?
That's a term that had to do with a lot of chalk laid down in Northern Ireland around the border during the times that the Vikings owned Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. So if it was beyond the pale, it means you were on the wrong side of the border.
Got it.
Anyway. Okay. Right. So we could build a wall there.
Well, let's see what happened during the week. The S&P 500 stock index was down a whopping 0.67% for the week. Isn't that exciting?
Oh, it has me on the edge of my seat.
So it closed down at 2,153, but it's still up almost 18% from its February low and up a measly 1% from its high point in March of 2015. A year ago, for those of you who are into ancient financial history,
it's a year. That's nobody remembers a year ago.
Well, the ancient financial history from a year ago is that the we were just coming out of a correction, and I'd be interested to know, anyone who hasn't read the newsletter, what was the cause of a 20% drop in the stock market that occurred in September and early October of a year ago. I wonder if anybody remembers that. I mean, it was terrible. The world was going to come to an end.
Yeah, there were headlines everywhere talking about the doom and gloom.
So you can call in on 773-1400 and tell us why a year ago we were in a panic.
So that's 254-773-1400.
And so anyway, we just come out of that. And so your one year return, we weren't completely out, we were pretty close. The 1 year return of the S&P 500 right now is 6.89%, which really sounds like a tremendous return to most of us today. It will, by the way, get lower as we move further up a year ago. There was a time when 10-12% returns were normal. And now when we get a 6-point-something% return in a year, we think it's really, really impressive. Now, if we want to go back 5 years and look where we were 5 years ago and come forward with the S&P 500, we find that the average annual rate of return was 11.44%, which is really impressive. Until you realize we were 5 years ago in the middle of a severe correction. The market was way down. And I wonder if anybody remembers what that was about.
Now, you're talking about prehistory. Now, if the other was ancient history,
that was 2011.
It's not that long ago.
No, it was in the recent past, and we concluded 2011, we concluded that indeed the world might come to an end momentarily, and it was all over the newspapers, and people sold out of the stock market, and I remember people calling in saying, should I get out, because I saw on Fox News that this was the end of the world.
Or even MSNBC in some cases.
Actually, I think it was pretty much everybody that called in. Now, this may just be because
to
our office. Because it may just be because all our clients listen to Fox. They don't listen to MSNBC.
That could be. There's a slightly better news quality.
But the point I wanted to make is that the terrible things that happened way back then when, way back then when?
Way back when then?
was...
It sounds like a conversation that Winnie the Pooh might have with Eeyore.
It might be. But the point is that those events were so terrible at the time that people were willing, thinking that the economy of the United States was going to collapse and that the world was coming to an end, in effect, financially. And the strange thing is, 1 year out, I have a lot of trouble finding people who remember why they were scared, or don't even remember being scared a year ago. And obviously,
right.
Since the phone lines are not lining up, either nobody's listening, which is a distinct possibility, or
nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Or those that do know have already read the newsletter, and so they are saying, well, of course I know. And you said, I can't cheat and call in.
Yeah, well, last year, at this time, the consensus was the Chinese economy was going to implode and take the world down with it.
Right.
And for those of you who don't remember what happened in 2011, it was the government shutdown.
Right.
One of two, actually, that occurred, or a threatened government shutdown. And here's the irony, at least to me.
Okay.
On September 28th, immediately prior to going out the door, Congress finally passed a temporary bill to keep the government from shutting down on October 1st.
Which year was this?
This year.
2011?
This year.
This year. That's correct.
Whereas...
And we didn't have any problem with that
right,
this year.
It
wasn't even in the news.
Right. In 2000... Now, this is the... And it didn't... Then we did... What's more is they don't come back into session until well after the elections.
Right.
And the funding only runs through December 9th. So on December 9th, the government is scheduled to shut down.
And nobody's talking about
unless
it.
Unless Congress can agree on something.
Well, they have to come back and agree on something. They
yes.
don't just have to agree on something. They have to come back to do business when they're not scheduled to do it.
Yeah, and they're going to come back quacking and limping.
Because if it quacks like a duck
no,
and
no,
limps
no,
like
no,
a duck?
No, it's a lame duck Congress.
Oh, okay. All right, all right.
And they can actually, this is one of the real ironies about Congress, I think, at least fascinating to me. The lame duck Congresses often get a lot more done than the others do because they got a lot of people who don't have to worry about being reelected because they weren't.
Right. That's something that I have felt for a very long time, that lame duck presidents and lame duck Congresses actually get the hard work done. The stuff that's not popular, but if they're not up for reelection or the election's already happened and it's now the entire length of their term between them and repercussions for their actions, they do the things that aren't popular that sometimes have to be done anyway.
Which is an argument for term limits, by the way.
Yes, it is. It's a very good argument for term limits.
And they get, you elect the guy or gal, and this is their last term. Therefore,
they may actually get the things done that they really want to get done and haven't done. Yep.
They're not trying to get reelected.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And there are some things out there, just as side notes, when people are saying, well, what good can Congress do? Well, for number one, fix Social Security. That's not on the headlines right now, but it's a big problem. Fix Medicare. Get those things fixed. It's not popular. You're not going to make any friends doing it. But those are the sorts of things that if a lame duck Congress were to make some moves and get it done.
And when you say fix.
By fix, I mean neuter. No, that's not what I mean.
No.
Spay and neuter your Social Security.
This is one of those. Another fascinating thing, at least to me, I'm a geek, is that in neither plank of the parties that are running someone for president, was there any mention of deficit or debt reduction?
That's correct.
Which in the recent past was the headline item, particularly for the Republicans. I mean, it was their, one of their defining characteristics is we want to cut the deficit,
it's
we want
there.
To balance the budget, and we want to get rid of the debt.
And you missed this, but several weeks back, I did a comparison of the economic policies of both candidates. And I went into a lot of depth. And my analysis matched up with a lot of the big think tanks out there, which is to say that both economic policies were absolutely disastrous long term.
Yeah.
And the reality is that it's likely not to happen. I was having this conversation similar last night with a client where I mentioned that I was explaining Social Security and the problems in Social Security and how they calculate what your earnings are and getting very technical there. And then I stopped and I said, wait a minute, let's go this from the big picture. Do you remember the biggest debate points between Al Gore and George W. Bush? And they said, and I said, it had to do with privatization or the lockbox. And if you're younger than about 25. You're not going to remember this, but the lockbox was Al Gore.
Wait a minute, you got to say that right.
Lockbox. Right. Was Al Gore's attempt to say, we're going to take some of the money that's being paid into Social Security and lock it away. We're not going to let Congress spend it. And
what they were going to do with it in the meantime was a little bit interesting.
Yeah, because they didn't say how that was going to work. You really can't take it to another country and buy their bonds. Nobody would really
cash.
Agree to that.
Just cash. Put cash in a box.
That's
really big box.
But all cash is an IOU as well. So what they're doing with it is a lockbox in a sense. It's an IOU to ourselves. But George W. Bush had an alternative. We're going to take part of Social Security and privatize it. And there was a lot of debate on this. It influenced how people were going to vote. It was a big deal. And it didn't happen either side.
Way. Right. And, well, the lockbox was pretty silly, and so was the privatization.
Right. Because as much as we would like that, it had already been tried in the UK, and it pretty well
failed.
It was
a disaster.
Because if a client calls in and say, hey, I just won the lottery, a prospective client, what should I do with the money? In the vast majority of cases, the logical answer is the wrong answer. Because the logical answer is the market has a lot better returns than what the state's going to give you on the lottery, blah, 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 blah. You've heard that. The best answer is likely don't take the lump sum, spend that monthly amount, and that's it. Because the average time that your typical lottery winner has between winning the lottery and filing for bankruptcy. So Ed should like that. There's a much higher percentage of people that win the lottery that file for bankruptcy than your average citizen.
Right.
3.5 years. It's the same number for a professional sports star coming into retirement. 3.5 years, and they're likely to be in bankruptcy court. The majority of them are in bankruptcy court 3.5 years later. And the reason is because they have more money than they know what to do with. And that's kind of a side note. But so the concept here, the big questions about economic policies of Hillary Clinton or the big questions about economic policies of Trump are kind of ludicrous because Congress has fairly well said, well, they need us to pass any of it and we're not interested.
Yeah, we have a really good constitution. And our constitution says that the House of Representatives has to originate any spending or taxing bills. And since the House of Representatives generally are at each other's throats to the point where they can't even figure out how to pass through the door.
Right. Let's pass through the door. I object. I'm going to filibuster that door.
But they did when they're coming up on an election.
They tend to get some things done.
And they're faced with either holding their ground ideologically or shutting down the government. They'll do it. Did you know what the fight was about over whether or not to shut down the government?
It began with something to do with funding for a specific plan, but then it turned into something else. What was it?
What happened was the Republicans threw in $500 million to go to Louisiana, which is heavily Republican.
Right, right.
And to repair flood damage from Katrina.
Well, that's recent past. No, not very recent at all. We're speaking about George W. Bush again.
And then the Democrats said, whoa, wait a minute. If you're going to do that, we want a couple of $100 million to fix Flint, Michigan's water supply because it's got lead pipes and children are suffering from lead poisoning.
And the Republicans said, that's not a natural disaster. That was done on purpose.
Well, in both cases, here's the fascinating thing. You had a Democratic governor that was being blamed for not properly funding. She's gone now.
Right.
In Louisiana, so it was a political point for the Republicans. And you had a Republican governor who's getting blamed for not properly administrating Flint, Michigan's water supply, and it really became a partisan fight. And you know what they finally did?
No, I don't.
They finally sent the money to Louisiana and a promise from Paul Ryan that when they pass the Clean Water Bill a little later this year in the lame duck Congress, that that Flint, Michigan would get the money to fix their water system. And here's the reason why. This is what's fascinating. The Republican congressman can go home and said, we blocked those nasty Democrats. We didn't send a penny to Flint.
Right. And then when they get back, they have to do it because it's really a problem that needs to be fixed. And at this point, Flint doesn't even have the idea on how to go forward.
And then the Democrats can go out there and say, look, we got a promise to spend money to fix Flint. So both sides can go back and brag that they won. And then when they get back together in the lame duck Congress, they'll neutralize the whole thing and send money to both places. And this is the fascinating thing. They had to both of those had to be certified as an emergency under the Balanced Budget Act.
Right. It's an emergency that we've known about for a long time in the case of Katrina.
And in the case of Flint, we've known
about a year that we've been following that.
Yeah. But the issue is that Flint shut down its water supply 5 years ago, 6 years ago, something like that, because it was too much lead in it. Mm-hmm. And what happened is when the state took over Flint because it went bankrupt, they started up their local water supply again without bothering to fix it.
Right.
So both of those are emergencies that happened 5 to 10 years ago, and as a result, they had to certify them as an emergency because this was the fascinating thing.
Because otherwise, you don't.
It was pure debt.
Right.
There was no tax raises suggested for either of those.
Right. You can't. It doesn't have to do a balanced budget on emergency bills, and that's how we paid for wars, and it's how we're paying for things like this, and it's a fairly normal practice.
Well, it was an unexpected emergency that Katrina hit 5 years ago.
It was a lot more than 5 years ago.
How many years ago was it?
Let's see. Katrina was in the middle of George W. Bush's presidency.
It was the second term.
So I think it was about 10 years ago.
Okay, so 10 years ago, something happened, and Congress has emergency funding.
Emergency.
They just passed, and the president signed. So it's not they don't have to raise taxes or cut spending somewhere else.
I need to remind the listening audience of the definition, the original definition of the word emergency. Not the political definition, but the original. It means an emerging item. Mm-hmm.
It means it just popped up.
Right. Emergency.
Unexpected.
The word news means it's new information. But the only new information here is that Congress is calling it an emergency.
Yeah, well, that enables them to spend money without either cutting the budget somewhere else or raising taxes.
A prior Congress allowed flexibility for future Congresses to declare emergencies
and
take care of it, because that's an important thing. We do want to take care of emergencies.
And a big chunk of our budget is now an emergency.
Yes, there's an emergency over there. We have to pay those people's paychecks.
And I want to emphasize something. I think in both cases, it is a valid role of the federal government to fix something that can't be fixed locally. And I personally think, given the interest rates that this money will be borrowed at, which are effectively below future inflation, it's probably a good idea to borrow money to fix this stuff, because the tax revenues that come in from fixing infrastructure, which is in both cases what they're doing, ultimately would be far greater than the money spent to fix it.
Yeah, the typical problem that we're dealing with here isn't the emergency, and it isn't the debt spending for the emergency.
It's the making of sausage.
Yeah, or it's the making of sausage and the realization that at some point, even if this is completely a good use of government money, somebody's got to have to pay it back. We're not using the budget appropriately. We're getting more into debt, even though the debt, you know, I know and I agree with you. So I'm leading this off with something we can all agree on. We don't like spending more than we're making. That's something that is universal. People don't like to do that unless they're very unhealthy. However, governments have an obligation to meet. So the question is, what do we cut? And that's where the error is. And the fact is that our debt is much lower than people think it is, but it's not great.
I disagree with you. I think people like to spend more than they make. Seriously. For instance, when you buy a house.
Sure, you like the feeling of doing it, but you don't like paying it off. That's the thing people don't like to do.
Actually, as they get later in life, they get really happy when they pay
it off. Because they've had the discipline to do it. We're adding more mortgages every year, and it's slightly less debt that's being added. That's where we look at. That's what people are uncomfortable with.
And I'm of the opinion that I know that a lot of people are going to disagree with what I'm about to say, so I'll warn you in advance, strap yourself in. I'm of the opinion that one of the reasons we're in an economic, not quite stagnation, but slow growth, is we had insufficient federal government spending during and following the Great Recession.
And I agree with you on that, but that's a purely, and a lot of people will disagree with both of us, but purely economically speaking, at the bottom of the recession, as you're saying, if more money had been spent to rebuild the structural integrity of our financial markets, because that's really what the danger was. There's other structural integrity issues in roadways and so on. But of the financial markets, we wouldn't be in the difficulties that we're having now and slowly growing, and that regulations are killing companies right now.
Well, let me take another example here of what I'm talking about. The Great Depression, we stabilized, and the economists were astonished at this. We stabilized.
3 minute stations, 3 minutes to your next Fox News.
Oh, it was interesting. Yeah. 3 minutes to the next Fox News. We stabilized during the Great Depression with about 30% unemployment and a very, 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 very low GDP growth, and we were stable there. Nobody believed up until that point. Free market capitalists, who were the mainline economists, including John Kenneth Galbraith at the time, and even Keynes.
Keynes,
were astonished that we could reach a stability of large unemployment, very, very, very low growth. He didn't think that was possible. We did. And what got us out of it was the Nazis. We should thank them. We should probably build a...
We're not going to be thanking them.
We could build a monument in Washington to
like
Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, thanking your...
And Tojo.
Yeah, let's thank your heart for having issues with you recently because...
Yeah. The point is that...
we can take responsibility for our actions about it.
In World War II, we borrowed a phenomenal quantity of money. I mean, making our current debt levels look minor, employed everybody who was able-bodied in the United States to go off and fight war, and then we had huge sinking assets, meaning we cranked up our industry and sent a lot of ships and tanks out there that we didn't get any economic benefit out of, and they just disappeared on the bottom of the ocean.
Right, and they became liquid assets almost by definition.
Well, they were sort of illiquid down there, but that's okay.
It may be a little too soon to have this kind of joke.
So the point is that this stuff went down. We spent a tremendous amount of money and in essence got nothing back. But what happened is the shot in the arm to the economy was enough to get the economy going again.
Right.
And we had something called the post-war boom. Now, Ronald Reagan. Jimmy Carter was actually a very conservative president when it came to finance.
Yeah, he didn't want to be taking on new debt. He wanted to get the spending down.
And we got economic stagnation. We got stagflation.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan came in and doubled down on the debt by building up the military to the largest it had been since World War II.
Right. And if you look at the
bankrupted the Soviet Union.
His spending went through the roof during his entire time in office.
And so did the deficit.
And if you look at what it did, is we won the Cold War. Now the Cold War's back.
And we had the economic boom for which Bill Clinton got credit.
Right, exactly. And that had a bit to do with the Resolution Trust Corporation and during George H.W. Bush, the savings and loan crisis. But the United States government spent money to buy up old assets that were off the books and very, very low in value, and then sold them at great profit later on, right in the middle of the Clinton administration.
So here's one of the great ironies. I do not support Donald Trump for president. However, I think one of the better ideas he has right now, he wants to cut taxes and raise spending right through the stratosphere, double down on the military, have a huge border patrol. Basically, he wants the federal government to approximately double itself in size. And if he did that, I think it would give the economy a shot in the arm. Now, I don't know how in the world he's going to cut regulations by 70% since Congress has to do that.
Well, so same with all the rest that you just said. Congress has to do all of what you just said.
But if he went to Congress and said, look, the Russians are getting nasty, and we're going to talk about that later, and they are, and they're building up their military, and they are, and we can either build up our military in hugely, or we're going to fight a war with them.
Yeah.
And I think Congress would have a hard time fighting that, given the findings that just came out.
This is a really good time to step in with a couple of things that happened yesterday.
Did you like that transition?
Yeah, that was a very nice segue. Two major events happened yesterday.
The sun came up and it went down.
Yes, that happened as well. More than two major events happened yesterday, but the two that I'm about to say are the ones that I had in mind when I said it.
He's going to say what he was about to say.
Okay, we'll even call it three, but one of them didn't happen yesterday. It happened last week.
This is getting better. This is getting better.
The United States government officially accused Russia of hacking into the campaign, the electoral campaign of the United States presidential election.
And trying to influence it with leaks.
Right, and influence it by dumping leaks into WikiLeaks. Now, WikiLeaks does not say this is true, and I'm going to tell you why it is that the government, and why I've said in the past on the air here, this is an area of great interest to me. I'm very interested in different methods of encryption and how to keep things secure, interested enough to understand the math. There are competing intelligence organizations, and this is actually your experience area more than mine, Jeff, my old dad and friend, and that you were in intelligence, but things have shifted a little bit. There are competing intelligence organizations in Russia. They're competing to give news to their higher-ups better, faster, get things to them.
So Russia believes in competition.
Yes. It's kind of strange. In the intelligence world, they believe in competition. They set these teams against each other, and there are two major hacking groups, very major hacking groups. One of them has been nicknamed Cozy Bear. It's got a lot of other names too, Strontium and a lot of others. But we started picking up, we being the United States and intelligence agencies that are like the United States. There are five native English-speaking countries that get together and share intelligence back and forth, and it's a very high clearance level. And they've been saying, whoa, they gave a nickname to this organization, calling it Cozy Bear. We've seen it in Ukraine, we've seen it in Syria, we've seen it in Paris and in lots of other places. There was a news organization that was hacked in Paris that all the slogans of the Islamic State popped up and basically said Islamic State forever all over in French, all over this website. It made big news at the time. It was about 4 years ago, and said to the French, stay away from the Islamic State, you crusaders, and all that really did was cause the French to be angry and want to attack the Islamic State, which is exactly what Russia wanted. Okay, there are tools that were used there and in Syria and in Ukraine that are very clearly state tools. They are extremely sophisticated computer programs. And let's go down the list of evidence. So if a state sponsor is involved, you don't have the same motivations that you would find for, like, Anonymous or a closeted hacker that is an adolescent of some kind. They get off on making the news and saying, look what we just did, and immediately take credit for everything. That's a big thing, because that's how they get their kudos in what they're doing, is they're patting themselves on the back and they're waving their hands over their head, hey, I did that, in some kind of anonymous format. Then there's the state sponsors, which have a much higher quality on the software that they're using. And that quality of software becomes recognizable because there are things that people do when they're programming, the way they name things, the way they use the language that they're writing in, that gives little characteristics that become identifiable very easily. And this is, it's kind of like a poet. You can hear two poetry readings and you can identify, oh, that was this guy and that was that guy.
No, you can hear two poetry readings.
If you heard Shakespeare, you would say that's Shakespeare.
Well, unless, of course, it was that count that was at the court that who also wrote exactly the same way.
Right.
Anyway, go ahead.
But
yeah.
It could be that it was the same person, and that's the thing. Okay. But they were in the same environment, in the same culture.
Right.
So you can identify the country relatively quickly by the language patterns in the programming. Mm-hmm. All programming is done in English, by the way.
Morse code.
Exactly.
Morse code operators could recognize who was at the other key by what they called his handle.
Right.
By the way he did his Morse code.
Right. And so that's one part of it. Then there are specific pieces of software that are not used by any other hacking groups. So if they have this sophisticated software, it's going to be only associated with that group into the future because they're not going to share that with anybody else.
Well, unless, of course, it's the NSA and a guy shares it. Never mind.
All right. That's a different organization.
And he goes to prison.
Right. So Cozy Bear, about a year and a half ago, after we've seen lots and lots of evidence of Cozy Bear all over the world doing things that are very definitely in the interest of Russia, they hacked into the Democratic National Convention and have been very quietly cataloging and reading emails.
Releasing them sometimes changed.
No. They didn't make any changes whatsoever.
Okay.
This is the idea. This is something that we can understand. Whoa, this is definitely interesting. Our computer just changed some major things. So somebody else is on the computer. That's what's going on.
Well, they've hacked in.
Right, or they've hacked in.
The Russians have hacked in because you're talking about.
Right. So this group, Cozy Bear, they get in and they get cozy, and they're very patient, and they do what is very normal for intelligence agencies. So just to say, for a side note, during the Cold War, the equivalent of hacking was bugging embassies and putting microphones in places where we could listen in. And fair game intelligence targets are possible political opponents in the future. It's very definitely okay to listen in. And there's kind of a rule of ethics in the intelligence world of you don't do anything with that data. You just keep tabs on us and we'll keep tabs on you.
And you put it really highly classified so the press will never find it.
Right. So Cozy Bear was doing that. This is traditional intelligence. And right in the middle of this, by the way, and we'll be talking about this, another group comes along, another bear. This bear is called Fancy Bear.
Oh, Fancy Bear.
And Fancy Bear is associated with a newer intelligence group in Russia made up of much younger programmers. It's like the brain trust of programmers in Russia, and that's a big deal. They have a lot fancier equipment. They have obviously a higher budget. So think of Cozy Bear as your traditional old school bureaucrat with a budget to make good hacking. And then you have the new startup, Fancy Bear. And Fancy Bear, unknowing that Cozy Bear had all the information already, so the right arm and the left arm are not talking to each other in Russia, hacked into the Democratic National Convention and into Hillary Clinton's electoral campaign. So both places. And immediately stripped it all out. This is what notified both organizations that they'd been hacked. Cozy Bear had been there for over a year already, just soaking up all the information, not doing anything with it, and not making obvious changes to the computers they were in. Well, then Fancy Bear comes along and strips it out, which causes the Democratic National Convention, which, by the way, the Republicans have hired the same firm at different times, to call in, I think it's Cloudfire is the name of this organization, and they're the equivalent of the Pinkertons of the 1860s and 1880s and 1890s. They're the folks that chase people down across state lines, in this case country lines, when jurisdictions don't go. They send people to deal with Interpol and with the Russian Federation police, and they go together to go pick them up for a fee.
It's the equivalent of the people who chased off Butch Cassidy and the Sundance
Kid.
Right,
and Billy the Kid. And
they kept crossing jurisdictions, and the law enforcement couldn't go after them.
Right, so they had to stop on the line. Right. Well, this is the same situation. So Cloudfire chases them down and says, yeah, these are known operators. We've got them, and you had another hacker that you didn't even know was going on in Cozy Bear back in the background. So they locked them off. They built this artificially intelligent through machine learning program that's looking for intrusions. So we have little agents running around in the terms of Matrix, of the Matrix, running around on these computers just looking for inadvertent access to the wrong thing.
They're all called Agent Smith?
Yes, exactly. So they're running around in there. They figured this out. The U.S. government says this is definitely Russia. There's nobody else it could be. It's state-sponsored in Russia by Russians. So they've just announced that. At this, this
officially, the FBI, the NSA, and the CIA all agreed. Which,
right.
Folks, we have competing intelligence agencies.
Yes,
too.
We
and,
do.
And when they all agree on something,
that says something major.
Yes,
it's not political. Okay, now let me say something about something we've held as a strong, very strong statement for our country for a long time, and John Kerry killed it. The Monroe Doctrine. The Western Hemisphere is ours. We've said that since Monroe. Roosevelt rephrased it to say the whole Western Hemisphere. We were saying, Europe, don't get involved in our elections. Because Europe was getting involved, the different powers of Europe, was getting involved in our state elections to try to get as much influence in the country as possible. Because at the time, the state legislature elected the Senate. Now, we've changed that, and it was based on this very concept. We don't want influence coming in places that we can't see. So the Monroe Doctrine says, if you influence an election in our country or in the Western Hemisphere, we consider it an act of war. John Kerry last year said the Monroe Doctrine was dead. Because part of the Monroe Doctrine is we weren't going to influence European politics the same way. And I'm not real sure why he killed the Monroe Doctrine. I'm not even sure he had the authority to do it. But for the vast majority of our history as a country, what we've just accused Russia with is an act of war, the same as a terrorist explosion being orchestrated by Russia. That's an act of war up till a year ago. And now we're not sure if it is or not. And we're in the middle of a lame duck Congress and a lame duck president. And Russia just moved nuclear weapons into Kaliningrad. We just arrested two Russians and an American for physically taking computer chips being used in tracking missiles, at Defense Department stuff, and taking them in. And one more thing, just in case you think it's a good thing that Hillary Clinton's campaign was hacked. Cozy Bear and Fancy Bear are also, Cozy Bear is behind the hacking of the Pentagon. Fancy Bear is behind the hacking of the White House and of several of the major defense contractors that are building equipment that we need to keep quiet so that we keep an edge over our enemies. This is not because they think Hillary Clinton wouldn't be the best president of the United States or because they think Trump would be. They're creating instability. It's what they mm-hmm. do. If you look at the Russian manifesto, it's everywhere. Create instability and then step in and create stability.
The Financial Times published an article, I think it was either yesterday or today, saying that the purpose in influencing was not to influence the outcome of the election, because they probably would be unable to do so.
Right.
The purpose was to prove that democracy is corrupt. Vladimir Putin has a powerful – we are harassing the heck out of them because their democracy is corrupt. They have fake democracy.
Yeah.
Anybody that is
no
actually in opposition to Putin winds up in prison, and then all of his allies can run for office and they win. And isn't that amazing, even though they only have 30% turnout for voting? Basically, he doesn't like democracy. He's tired of us telling him he should have a democracy.
He doesn't like the sanctions that we're putting on.
So what he's doing is he is doing something to discredit American democracy. We do need to do commercials.
I'm not sure they're going to run properly. The channel they usually run through has been hijacked by Fox, it sounds like. So I'm going to try to run commercials, and we'll see what happens.
You had a Fox hijack the channel?
Yeah. So I'm going to try to run some commercials, and we'll be back on the other side. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back. And we're back with more of the personal wealth coach with Jay. You say it
with gonna, Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And you need to say that in the right voice.
Right.
And we're back with and more of the personal wealth coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
Who was that masked man?
You have to say it in the Lynn Woolley radio voice, or it's not real.
Yes, and we had goodwill sent to you from Lynn Woolley this morning as well. Dave
goodwill?
Hodges on the way out said that Lynn wanted to wish you the best.
Oh, that's good. Well, I am. We were going to say something about that. I am back. This is Jeff, and I'm here. Somebody said, "How are you?" I'm here, which is a
distinct improvement.
Distinct improvement.
Before he was somewhere else.
And yeah,
you
was,
never want to be somewhere else.
I was
else.
In bed a lot, but I'm on the way to full recovery. No permanent damage or anything. So it's just slow. And Jake was kind enough to let me come on to his show today.
Still not my show, still our show.
Oh, okay.
If you want to call it a show.
But it's a really big shoe.
Program. We're showing nothing unless you can see us on the radio.
Well, I don't know. Can you see what he said?
I saw what I think I said.
Oh, okay. Can you see what I'm talking about?
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I see what you mean.
Anyway, 773-1400, local area code 254. So 254-773-1400 is the number to call in here if you would like to join in our inane discussion of things international and national and things like that. We just have 5 minutes left in the first hour of our show, our non-show, our program. But are we programmed is the question. I think we're far less programmed than we used to be. Anyway, getting off the subject of the Russians and the fact that I really like the idea of getting ready to fight them because I think they're going to fight if we don't.
They're going to go bankrupt at the rate that they're spending on military, and that generally means they're going to use the military.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, the NATO commander, who is obviously a U.S. General, I don't know if you knew that or not, it's always a U.S. general, said that within 5 years, Russia will either need to use their military and grab some stuff to pay for it.
They're using it already.
Or... And by grabbing something that has value, though.
Right.
Right now, Syria doesn't have much value.
But
okay?
It will if they continue to bomb the snard out of all the civilians.
It could, but only as a warm water port so they can do something else.
They've
with
got
it.
A warm water port, but if they get some interest in the oil there.
Is there anyone? I don't. Anyway, there might be. But this is the big issue is that they either have to move in a major way against NATO within the next 3 years.
Or they're going to be bankrupt.
Or they're going to be bankrupt. And one of the reasons they, very frankly, Putin has endorsed Trump.
4 minute stations.
And he has, for very good reason, Trump wants to be buds with Putin and agrees with him. And I don't, and if you also noticed, and I'm not pro or con here, this is simply his statements. Donald Trump said that we basically ought to back off our NATO commitment. And there's three little countries up there on the Baltic that Russia would love to have. They have lots of money.
Russia has had in the past.
Yes.
They're not willing to be back in Russia's control.
And they're members of NATO, and he would love to have a president who said invading those three little countries would not be a big deal for the new president.
Now, I'm going to throw something in here about our treaty obligations. I believe that's as clear as we can be in a treaty to give our word that we're going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in honor. I believe in ethics and integrity. We brought some very scared countries into the fold of NATO with the knowledge that at some point there could be chaos in Russia if they went under, or they could turn into a dictatorship and invade. Those countries brought something to the table for us, too, in that we get to use their countries as staging points to help preserve the integrity of the rest of Europe. Now, that then says anytime we do that, we have a lot more that has to be done to protect those new countries. If we leave, they are hanging in the wind, and we promised them we would help.
One of the reasons that we got into World War II, one of the reasons that Germany felt confident in invading countries, if you read your history books carefully and the analysis of what led up to World War II, and I have, is President Wilson, a Democrat, just to be bipartisan here, said... He was elected on the premise of not getting involved in the European wars because Germany was already rattling sabers and getting ready to do things, and he simply said, we are not going to get involved in the European wars. We're going to stay out of them.
Leave them to their own wars.
Now,
they started it. They should end it.
And
which is great, except that it affects us.
Well, now, Roosevelt was elected on the same plane.
Right. Peace in our times. Continued.
Well, that was actually Chamberlain.
Right. That was Chamberlain. For World War One, but coming forward, it's the same. World War One was Chamberlain.
No, Chamberlain.
Peace in our times.
No, Chamberlain was led up. He made a negotiation with Hitler, that let him have Czechoslovakia and some other places in exchange for peace.
That's the same concept that was coming forward.
And the point that I want to make is, when there is an aggressor, and Russia is the new Germany, when there is an aggressor, we have a problem. And the problem is that if we elect somebody president who wants to appease them, there's a much higher probability that that president will get an opportunity to declare war.
That's pretty historically
accurate.
Or ask
Congress to declare war.
Right.
Anyway, and are we out of time?
We're about out of time for this hour. We'll be back next hour. But if you would like to contact us off the air, we actually give fiduciary investment advice to people with high net worth through our office in
Did you
Salado.
Say high net worth?
High net worth.
I thought there was an Apple program.
As in, hello. Okay. So if you'd like to contact us off the air, we've got voicemail waiting on the weekend and live people during the week and week hours. That is 254-947-1111. You can reach that number toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
Or you can contact us by email at either Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com.
You can go to our webpage, tpwc.com, listen to podcasts. Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
In Central Texas, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.